into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Well, after what's felt like the shortest period ever between seasons, the Premier League is back this weekend. And just 52 days after they lifted their 19th English League title, Liverpool back in action tomorrow when they host last year's championship winners Leeds on the opening weekend of the new season. Big spending Chelsea will go to Brighton on Monday night. We've got two live games on Off the Ball on News Talk on Sunday. Exclusively live in Ireland, commentary of West Brom against Leicester at 2 p.m. with Kenny Cunningham on commentary there with Stephen Doyle. And Ryan Kerr will join Nathan Murphy for Tottenham against Everton, 4:30 on News Talk this Sunday afternoon. To look forward to all the games this weekend and the return of the Premier League after just 2 months away, we're joined by News Talk's Team 33 host, Enda Call, and the voice of sport each morning on Today FM, Philip Egan. They're going to be giving their predictions for the coming season, which no doubt we're either going to forget about them in a month's time or they'll be used to taunt them come the end of the campaign, depending on how widely wrong they are. If you want to see the predictions from the entire OTB Sports team, they are available now on the OTB Sports website. That's otbsports.com, or check out the OTB Sports app for all of your latest stories. Gentlemen, good afternoon to you.
How are you?
Phil, I might start with yourself. Obviously, this season has come around extremely quickly. As I mentioned, only 52 days since Liverpool lifted the Premier League title. A couple of games after that to finish out the season. But given the way that things have occurred with the international break just before this, and given that the Champions League and Europa League ran right through August, it feels like there's been very little off-season here at all.
Yeah, I think it makes for a really hard season to predict, because you obviously have the short turnaround, you've no fans inside stadiums at the moment, and the schedule is going to be so packed that this is the season, I'd say, out of most seasons in recent years, that could be the hardest to predict. So you mentioned there, we've tried to make our predictions on the OTB Sports website. I think a lot of us could be looking quite foolish come the end of the season, because we just don't really know how it goes. You just touched on the international games. One thing that was quite noticeable was how off the pace a lot of the players looked.
And I guess it is entirely understandable that players will be pretty tired given how long things went into the summer. I know they had a break with the pandemic between March and June, but they've still played a lot of football to get the season completed. They've had a very short pre-season, and in the case of many players in the Premier League, they were away on international duty last week.
Yeah, they had a break during the season, but I suppose the essence of the Premier League season being packed together so tightly as it was, that probably disregarded any sort of a break that they had. So it is pretty tough for them going into this without a pre-season, and I would say you'll probably feel the effects of that at the first opening couple of weeks of the Premier League. Might be a little bit slower than it is. It's usually a bit stop-start when it comes to the start of the Premier League anyway. So without a pre-season and without the teams fully developed the way they are, I mean, I saw Jurgen Klopp was chatting about how Chelsea were buying in players, and he had a little bit of a dig at them. But again, he touched on a good point that they might not necessarily start as well as they hope, because when you bring in that amount of players, you don't have a pre-season to actually get them to gel together, work with each other as much as you'd like before the game starts. So it's going to be interesting in the first couple of weeks to see how it goes, especially the fact that the teams that went further in Europe aren't actually starting this weekend either. So it's going to be a little bit different this year than it was in previous years anyway.
Yeah, Man City and Manchester United have a little bit of a longer break, so they're not playing this weekend. So we've only got 8 fixtures in all. We'll look at all those in a little bit detail further on. But Enda, who's impressed you in the transfer market? Because Premier League clubs haven't done a massive amount of business, but I guess that's understandable given all the uncertainty financially around the pandemic currently.
It's been pretty quiet so far. I suppose Chelsea are the team to look at when you're talking about the transfer window. I thought they've strengthened well in the positions that they needed to. They desperately needed a left back, and Chilwell is a great buy at that. If he manages to stay fit, he was injured quite a bit last season. Thiago Silva is a good option. I'm not sure how he's going to get on at the pace of the Premier League. Lewandowski burned him up for pace in the Champions League, so it doesn't really bode well for how his legs are looking. But going up front, if you're looking at Timo Werner coming in, Kai Havertz was excellent. We'll wait and see how the rest of them get on. But if they manage to gel, they probably strengthen the best. Leeds as well have finally got a striker, Rodrigo. He didn't score that many goals last season for Valencia, but they desperately needed a striker as well. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, people are sort of obsessed with the transfer window at the minute. United have only brought in one player. They need to bring in more players. I don't think City will have strengthened as much as they would have wanted so far. So there's still a couple of weeks left in the transfer window. Thiago could still go end up at Liverpool. So I'm going to hold my opinion on that until the start of the season to see how those players get on.
Well, Phil Egan, Rodrigo became Leeds' record signing. They've spent around 30 million euro on him. But perhaps the most important signing is going to happen in the coming days, and that's the pen to paper finally going on Marcelo Bielsa's new contract. Everything is agreed. Good to go. He's going to stay in charge. And now as he goes into a third season with Leeds, this is the longest club job he's ever had.
Yeah, and genuinely there was a little bit of a concern that Bielsa's done this in the past where start of the season, just think back to his time at Lazio, didn't like the way things were going and just said, I'm out of here. And you knew that Leeds were going to do all they could to keep him, and whatever he wanted, he gets, because he's brought them back to the Premier League. 16 years they were waiting to get back there, and I think they're so well equipped. I know Jurgen Klopp has been speaking ahead of the game tomorrow, where he actually, and I certainly agree, that Leeds are probably better equipped to manage in the Premier League than in the Championship. Just given the way the game is played in the Premier League, I think their style of play will be perfectly suited. I think they'll have a decent season. I'm not saying they're going to break into the top six or a European place, but they definitely look like they could give a lot of teams a lot of problems. Didn't Mikel Arteta say last season when they played them in the FA Cup, playing Leeds was really hard and was the equivalent of going to the dentist, and not a nice dentist.
Indeed. Well, that's a one-year contract which Marcelo Bielsa has agreed on the eve of the new season with Leeds. There was a little bit of confusion when those contract talks had drawn on through the month of August, but he confirmed at his press conference yesterday that everything was in place for the contract to be signed, and Leeds have announced that he will be staying for the coming season earlier today too. Phil, I'll ask you about Man City, because Man City are favourites with the bookmakers for the coming campaign. It looks like they're not going to get Lionel Messi now that Messi has decided to stay at Barcelona for the last year of his contract, somewhat under duress. But City, do they need improvements on last year to get closer to Liverpool? Or will the fact that they left so many trophies behind last season be the inspiration they need to get back to the level they were at previously?
I think the way, if you're looking at how City approach the season, they're probably thinking Liverpool, and I don't think any team is going to be finishing high 90s. I touched on it there, just the busy schedule, just the way the games are going to be coming thick and fast, no fans, and just the uncertainty around the season. So you're looking at, if you're Manchester City, you don't need to get in the high 90s, but have they improved? Nathan Ake coming in is a slight improvement. It means if you want to play him, you can play him as a left back if you actually want, but that's where he played for the Dutch in the international games. But if you're playing them as a centre half, okay, he's an improvement on the likes of Otamendi and Stones, but you know, he's part of a Bournemouth defence that got relegated, and Bournemouth were never really known for being good at the back. Then you've obviously got Torres. If Sergio Aguero gets injured, which seems to happen a lot over the last few seasons, then they lose that natural finisher up front. I know they score a lot of goals, obviously the top scorers in the league, but a lot of that can be inflated by certain games where they rack up massive scores. Like, you think back to how they put 8 past Watford. They do that in certain games, but ultimately, when the pressure was on last season, City failed. Whether it was the Champions League, whether it was big games in the Premier League, they just didn't get it done. So I'd wonder, in terms of their mentality, they might have the best player in the Premier League in their starting 11, but that might not be enough.
Yeah. And in terms of what's going to be needed to win this Premier League then? The last 2 years, as Phil mentioned, you nearly have to aim for 100 points as opposed to aiming for 80, given the consistency of both Man City and Liverpool. Is a 90-plus season going to be needed to actually win the title this season?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a much lower points season in terms of the spread across the top four. I'd say it'll be a lot tighter. There won't be 20 points between first and third. You're looking at probably Liverpool, City, Chelsea and United battling out for the top four, depending on where those places are. Depth in the squad. And I suppose this is where the issue comes with Liverpool and why their fans might be a little bit worried that they haven't really added to their team, is that squad depth is going to be really important with this condensed fixture list, and they don't really have that. They brought in a left back to fill in for Robertson if he gets injured. But other than that, you're looking at if one of the front three gets injured, probably Minamino, who played a lot in the preseason, is probably going to come in there in the midfield. They still don't really have that depth. But again, if you're going to be as consistent as they were last year, you don't really need it. And they got quote unquote lucky with injuries last year. They didn't really have too many. If they can go this season the same, then they don't really need that squad depth. So I don't think teams are going to be breaking the 100 mark this year. I'd say you'll be lucky if you have the first place side getting 90 points this year, just because of the nature of the way that the players are going into this, and the spread across the top four is much tighter this year as opposed to last year.
Well, our football coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, check out dunlewy.net. I mentioned that Man City are the favourites with the bookmakers. That is the case with Paddy Power. We're joined by Paddy Power's Jason Murphy now. Jason, why are your firm making Man City what seems to be reasonably clear favourites, but with Liverpool just behind them for this year's Premier League title?
Hi, Will. Yeah, a good way of breaking this down is this summer was meant to be the end of Alan Pardew's famous 8-year contract for Newcastle. He got that off the back of an unbelievable run of results that's seen them almost qualify for the Champions League in a season where they had 7 wins by a single goal margin. There's a lot of luck that goes into those 1-0 wins that they got. The following season, they didn't get that luck, that variance that we talk about, and they finished up with 24 points less, just above the relegation zone, and obviously Pardew was gone shortly after that. So there's a lot of variance that can happen over the course of a season. How many games did Liverpool win, do you think, by a single goal margin in the league last year?
Got 7 or 8?
It was actually 14, which is an incredible stat. And that partly explains the 23-point gap that we've seen at the end of last season. Now, we have Man City priced at 8-11, Liverpool at 2-1. What those prices tell you that if this season was played 10 times, we'd expect Man City to win it 6 times, Liverpool to win it 3 times, and then possibly both of those teams have a really bad season, and potentially you could see Chelsea United maybe nicking it 1-10. What happened last season with Man City against teams in the top 7, they played 12 matches and they lost 7 of them. Could you see Man City losing 7 games against what we know to be the top 6 next season? I don't think so. And Klopp himself talks about football being about moments. And in the first half of last season, Liverpool got a really good run of luck in big moments. I'm talking about Dean Henderson gifting them a goal against Sheffield United. I'm talking about the game at Anfield against Man City in particular, where at one end of the pitch, it's either a goal-scoring opportunity for Man City until it hits a Liverpool defender on the arm. 30 seconds later, it goes down the other end and Fabinho puts one in from 30 yards. Those moments, Lallana's late equaliser against United to keep momentum going, those moments all went in Liverpool's favour last season. It's hard to see it happening again next season. And the big thing, the big moment, it was really early in the season, but Rodri against Brighton, they're winning 4-0, they win the game 4-0, misplaces a pass, Laporte stretches to win the ball and gets injured. I say to you, if it was the other way around and Van Dijk was out for the period of time that Laporte was last season, do you think Liverpool would have won the league last year?
It would have definitely been far more difficult. I mean, Van Dijk is by far their most important player, so... Yeah, I mean, I can see the argument around that. I think Man City had their worst season under Pep Guardiola last year in terms of dropping points. It's unlikely that that would happen 2 seasons in a row. I'm guessing that's part of the logic here too.
Absolutely, and that's all we can do is kind of price it up as best we can, but we try to use stats to support that. And I know Phil mentioned about Man City winning a lot of games, 5-0, you know, an 8-0 thrown in as well. And that's when you talk about expected goals, it's known as stats padding. But Liverpool themselves, when it comes to XG, when they go ahead in games, Klopp is very good at getting them to manage games more so than what he did in his first couple of seasons where they tended to burn out. So Liverpool don't necessarily go for the stats padding, almost like kind of what Atletico Madrid do in La Liga. So as bookmakers, look, if you're going to have a bet, I always say, have a look at the prices if you think it's wrong. If you think Liverpool, if the Premier League season was played 10 times, that they'd win it 4 or 5 times, then I think you should be backing Liverpool at 2-1. But for us as the bookmakers, we think the prices based on what happened last season and what we expect to happen this season are pretty right. Motivation, we believe, is a huge factor as well when it comes to the top teams as well when they're going for titles. And winning a title, maybe it just satisfies Liverpool a little bit. They were very... the year before to put up the points total that they did and lose a Champions League final, they were really fired up to go for it last year. Whereas Man City, I think, will be motivated even more so this year to get that title back.
Tell us about the relegation race then. How are you pricing the teams to go down?
Yeah, so at the moment we'd have Fulham at 10 to 11. We'd have West Brom 11 to 10. You'd Aston Villa 13 to 8, Newcastle 15 to 8, and Crystal Palace at 2 to 1. For me personally, I think Fulham will go down. If you look at the back four that are coming up with, three of them, Tim Ream, Brian and Odie, actually played in the Fulham team that got relegated 2 years ago and conceded 81 goals in that season, one of the worst defensive performances of a Premier League team that we've ever seen. And they're heavily reliant on Mitrovic, 26 goals in the Championship last season. The year they were in the Premier League, he got 11 of their 34 goals. So what I would say is Fulham are going to struggle. And if anything happens to Mitrovic, I think they're gone. Great for them to be back in. Scott Parker did a great job getting them back up, but they're really going to struggle. I'd have West Brom in the same kind of a boat. Great job coming up. A lot of their good work was in the first half of the season last year in the Championship. After Christmas, they struggled and they really stuttered towards the end. Their last four games in the Championship, they lost one and drew three, so they almost fell over the line to get one of those top two spots. And the third team in the tip that I give you to go down with them, I'd put up Crystal Palace at 2-1. Reason being, unexpected points based on performances last season, Crystal Palace only finished 1 point above the relegation zone. Out of their wins, seven of them were by a single goal margin. Look at the variance I mentioned about Newcastle. And there's nothing that has happened in the transfer window that I can see Crystal Palace being any different next season. 9 goals from Jordan Ayew. Can you expect him to do any more next season? Batshuayi, it's hard to know whether he's going to get them enough goals to stay up either. I think Crystal Palace are in real danger. There's probably 3 teams from 6 to go down. So it's 50-50 for a lot of those teams, and you're getting 2-1 on Crystal Palace being one of those teams, I think, is one of the best bets. If you wanted a relegation treble, you could put all 3 teams in, Fulham, West Brom and Crystal Palace, and you get that at 20-1.
First manager gone. I have otbsports.com open in front of me here, so I can see Phil and Enda's selections. Phil has gone quite controversially, I think, for Brendan Rodgers of Leicester City to be the first manager gone. Endicall has gone for a guy who definitely was the favourite a few weeks ago when I checked the odds on this, David Moyes of West Ham. Who do you reckon is the first manager gone?
Yeah, we'd have David Moyes as favourite in the betting there at 7-2 at the moment. We've Roy Hodgson 5-1 for reasons outlined, and then the prices start to get a little bit bigger after that. 9-1 Steve Bruce, 9-1 Sean Dyche, I think. But David Moyes would be who I tip up. Two reasons. First of all, he's on a 1-year contract. So Mike Ashley doesn't sack managers because of the payout, whereas West Ham will, especially if it's only 1 year, there won't be much to pay to get rid of him. They got rid of him in the past when he's done a decent job for them too. But most concerning of all is the opening run of fixtures that they have. They have a game against Newcastle tomorrow, which isn't a gimme by any means. But after that, they play Arsenal, Tottenham, Leicester, Wolves, Man City and Liverpool. So when we get 7 or 8 games into the season, I can see West Ham having a very, very low points tally. And, the West Ham board, the Warren Shy in ousting Pellegrini last year when it didn't start very well. So for me, David Moyes at 7-2 with his length of contract is rightly at the head of that market.
And Jason, ahead of the first weekend, I want to ask you about home advantage, because I know when we spoke about this during lockdown, you thought maybe it wasn't going to play as much of a role as it would previously when stadiums were full. Is that reflecting itself in the odds now when it comes to home teams?
Yes, very, very much so. So to break it down or to give it context, if you have 2 teams that are equally rated the same and to play at a neutral venue, both teams go off at about 7-4 to win the match in 90 minutes. So it's saying they have about a 35-36% chance of winning that match. If you take those 2 teams and put one of them in their home stadium, packed stadium with their home fans. The price goes from 7-4 to about 6-5. So their chances of winning in 90 minutes actually increases by about 9%. Now, home advantage is an umbrella term. There's a lot of factors that go into it, including the size of the stadium, having home fans there, how far the away team has to travel. You can break down all those factors. So, for example, away team having to travel, if you go back 100 years ago, you would have seen a lot more home wins. The home win rate was about 70%. It's actually reduced to about 60% in the last 20 years. Thinking behind that is 100 years ago, it was a lot harder to get to matches. Obviously, you mightn't been full of energy when you got there. If you went 2-0 down away from home after 10 minutes, you could probably call it a day. Whereas now, with it being live on Sky, fans getting onto you on Twitter, you still have to dig in and you'll probably pull out a draw at the end of it. So teams having to travel is a big factor. And we've seen that in lockdown. Crystal Palace travelled to Liverpool. 20 people carriers is apparently what they use. That's not a fun drive. And as a Premier League player, to get out of a car, I mean, I've travelled in Carlo like half an hour out the road for a match. You're not fit getting out of the car. You're a bit stiff. For those lads to sit in the people carriers, it's not what Premier League players are used to in terms of travel. And they ended up getting bet 4-0 by Liverpool. They might have got bet 4-0 anyways, but it definitely didn't help their performance. And at that level, the minor details can matter so much. Southampton, with the chief executive they had when Pochettino was in charge, they looked at players' sleeping patterns for away games. And at the end of the day, what they decided to do was to get every player their own individual mattress, transported to the hotel for the away game the night before it, so that players would sleep as best they can in preparation for that away game. It might make 1% of a difference, but that's at this level, 1% is massive. But the big thing in terms of home advantage is not having the home fans. And the reason that is that home fans influence referees. Referees are professional, but they're only human at the end of the day. Studies show that once you start to get 5,000-6,000 fans, you will see decisions being influenced. The benefit from having more fans kind of dwindles the more you go up. So 6,000 is not as good as having 50,000 home fans, but it's nearly just as effective. And what really it affects, what we've seen in the games played without fans, about 800 games across the European leagues in lockdown, is that the distribution of cards is quite different. So beforehand, you would have had away teams getting most of the yellow cards, but it's actually a 50-50 split if you look at the lockdown games. So what difference does that make? It means that when there's 20 minutes to go, in front of a home crowd, a player might already be on a yellow card because the ref booked him in the first half because the crowd got on his back. Whereas now in lockdown, he isn't, and therefore he might decide to actually, let's break that attack, let's pull it down, give away a free kick and I'll take my booking. And that kind of feeds into home advantage. So what I'll say is, like I said, the price from 7-4 to 11-10, if you remove home advantage fully, there's still some home advantage factors there, such as being familiar with the stadium, the away team still having to travel. Like Harry Kane says at the old White Hart Lane, when he was having a shot, he was able to tell by the markings of the hoardings and the pitch where he was at in relation to the box, where the goal was to shoot from. So you still have all those home advantage factors there, but the crowd being missing is massive. And it's reflective. If you look at Southampton away to Crystal Palace this weekend, Southampton went away to Crystal Palace in January, packed Selhurst Park. Southampton were 7-4. They're going off at about 13-10 tomorrow. And that's, yes, Southampton probably rated a bit better, Crystal Palace rated a little bit worse, but that'll show you clearly the difference between having a packed Selhurst Park and not. It's about 6-7% difference in terms of either Southampton or Palace winning that game tomorrow.
There you go. An insight not just into the Premier League, but also in the travel arrangements in the Carlow and District Football League too. Jason, thanks a million for joining us. A chance now to delve into the fixtures a bit more deeper for this weekend with both Enda and with Phil. Phil, I'm going to ask you about the second of our live commentary games this Sunday, because this is one that kind of stands out for me going into this weekend, which is Tottenham at home to Everton. Spurs now have got their players back. The summer has been good to them in terms of injuries clearing up. They should be ready to hit the ground running, which they weren't in Jose Mourinho's opening couple of months as manager. And Everton have invested quite interestingly too, with Alan coming in and James Rodriguez. They've certainly packed their midfield ahead of this new campaign.
Yeah, I mean, starting with Tottenham, obviously, it's all or nothing for Jose Mourinho this season. And, you know, he's made a few Mourinho-type signings in Højbjerg, bit of metal in midfield. He doesn't really want players like Harry Winks in there who, you know, they pass the ball but often pass it sideways. He needs a bit of steel in there. Højbjerg, one of the best go-getters of the ball in the Premier League. The stats would back that up. Obviously, Irish fans would be very interested to see how Matt Doherty gets on. Mourinho usually plays with a back four, but something Stephen Kenny actually touched on when he talked about Matt Doherty joining Spurs, the way Aurier plays, that he will get forward, and Matt Doherty will get forward. So that's good news for Irish fans, because we don't want Matt Doherty basically being told to stay behind the halfway line all the time. Everton needed to beef up that midfield. It'd be interesting to see what formation Carlo Ancelotti goes with, but you're looking at, if you're playing James Rodriguez, you want to obviously play him in that number 10 role. I think he's certainly a big upgrade on Gylfi Sigurdsson, who on his day, Gylfi Sigurdsson can be very good, but often has games where he just goes missing. But in fairness to him, that has been a problem with Everton, especially away from home. So if Everton were to start with a win, this would be massive for Ancelotti. It'd be interesting to see, obviously, if Seamus Coleman is in that team, and does Ancelotti go with a three at the back? They certainly looked a lot more threatening when they played with Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin as a two up front. And if you want to play James Rodriguez in behind them, then it might suggest a three at the back formation might suit them. And you wonder, where is that Seamus Coleman going in as a wing back, or does he go in as one of the three, the Aspilicueta role under Conte, where you've got a fullback who's used to covering, so it actually works out well sweeping in behind two centre halves.
Well, Enda, our other live game on Sunday at 2 p.m. is West Brom against Leicester City, a bit of a kind of a Greater Midlands derby between the two teams here. Phil has tipped Leicester City to have a bad season if he's tipping Brendan Rodgers to be gone as the first manager. Leicester finished last season terribly, should have been in the top four, but ended up having to settle for fifth place. What do you make of Leicester going into this season, Enda?
Well, you asked me about the transfer market earlier on. Leicester, it feels like we've been saying this about Leicester for the last 3 or 4 years, that they have an over-reliance on Jamie Vardy, and they still have that over-reliance on Jamie Vardy. They still don't have that striker that can come in and make up for the goals that he misses if he's not scoring or if he's out injured. And last year, Vardy was in the 20s, and the next top goal scorer in the Leicester team was Jose Perez with 8 goals. So that shows you the margin of difference between their striker, their second top striker, and their top striker. And Jamie Vardy had a really good season at the start of the season last year, and when Leicester start to drop off in form, you can match that with Jamie Vardy's drop off in form as well. He went two and a half months without scoring a goal after Christmas, and that's where Leicester started to suffer. They haven't filled in with that second striker just yet. Jose Perez isn't going to get you 20 goals a season. Harvey Barnes isn't going to get that amount of goals either. You're looking at the midfield. You want that four in midfield that they usually play to start building up their goal tally as well, if they're going to be challenging for the Champions League. I don't think they will be. Their defence is weaker this year without Ben Chilwell as well. And Jamie Vardy, how many more years can he actually do this? He's aging. He gets injured a bit more often, and if he's out injured, then they're going to suffer. And I do think that they're not going to be as good as they were last year, mainly because the other teams around them are going to be better as well. Last year, United had one of their worst starts of the season since the 90s. Chelsea were stop-start. They were inconsistent, conceding a lot of goals. They're going to be better this year. United are going to be better this year. Arsenal are going to be better this year as well, because they've strengthened in their team. Tottenham will have all of their players fit. So you're looking at the teams around them. Everton have improved as well. So that bunch that are going to be fighting for top six, that's a lot tighter this year, and Leicester had the advantage last year of starting well where others didn't, but then you saw that they dropped off. They can't afford to drop off this year, and their start may not be as good as others as well this coming season. So I'd agree with Phil. I don't think they're going to be up in the top four this year at all.
Well, as we head into our final few minutes of this Friday's show, and I'll give you the shout on what's going to happen on Monday, not Brighton and Chelsea, but the game between two teams who kind of flirted with the top four at different times last year, and that's Sheffield United and Wolves. Wolves have, again, been bringing players in over the last week, but for the best part, they've got the core group that got to the quarterfinals of the Europa League this season just gone by. How do you think that's going to go between Sheffield United and Wolves?
Sheffield are going to be one of the more interesting sides this year coming. Second season syndrome is a thing. They took a lot of teams by surprise last year, but they have been weakened in their team. So Dean Henderson isn't in there anymore. There's talk that Lundstrom might not be there for the full season as well. So Sheffield United didn't really they surprised everyone by where they were last year. I don't think, again, sort of like the Leicester situation, that top six is way more condensed and contested this year coming than it was last year. So I don't think they're going to be anywhere near that. They didn't score nearly enough goals last year. Their defence was excellent, but going forward, they weren't good enough. So I think they're going to struggle this year. I don't think they're going to be relegation candidates, but I do think they will be in the bottom half of the table, whereas Wolves can only continue to get better. I think they have lost Matt Doherty, which is a loss, but they've still kept that core group, like you said, Ruben Neves, Raul Jimenez, Adama Traore going forward as well. So I think they are still going to be up there with the likes of Tottenham, with the likes of Arsenal. I don't think they're going to be competing for the top four, but I do think that they are going to be where Everton were about 3 to 4 seasons ago, continuously competing for that European spot. And Nuno will only continue to improve them, I think.
Phil Egan, I know you've mentioned that you reckon Leeds are going to do well in the Premier League. They're back in the Premier League for the first time in almost 2 decades. It's a difficult way to start away to Liverpool at Anfield. Would maybe be more difficult if fans were in attendance. But can Leeds put it up to Liverpool tomorrow evening?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they will. I think they'll have moments in the game where they outplay Liverpool. And in a way, I think it's a good time for Leeds to play Liverpool, because it's the first game of the season. We've obviously talked about how teams don't have their full sharpness, but one thing you always associate with Bielsa teams is they do tend to hit the ground running, and it's more towards the end of the season. But it's just, you know, you heard Calvin Phillips talking about being back in the Premier League. This is a guy from Leeds, made his England debut during the week, said he was in tears for days after that defeat to Derby in the Championship playoffs last season, or the season before, and wondered, would he ever get to the Premier League with Leeds? Would he have to leave? But they regrouped. Obviously, they're up. They're going to absolutely relish this, and they're going to the home of the champions. It's on TV. They're going to absolutely be well up for this game. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win, but if they got a draw, it wouldn't surprise me. It's going to be an uncomfortable afternoon for Liverpool, I'd say, in certain spells. But in a way, it might suit Liverpool, the fact that Leeds will try and play it, and Liverpool will be able to press them. Obviously, Leeds are going to try and press Liverpool, but we've seen Liverpool can beat pressing teams by going direct at times, because they have players that can play long passes. The likes of Van Dijk, Alexander-Arnold, Robertson, they can switch play, and that's one way of beating the press. So Leeds have a tough start. They play City in the next few games as well, but I wouldn't fear for them going down at all, definitely not.
Okay, we're just about to head into injury time, so quickfire final round for both of you. People can read your predictions in more detail on the OTB Sports website. But Phil, give me your top four and your player of the season.
Okay, the top four, I went for Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea, and Manchester United in that order. And then my player of the season, I think De Bruyne is going to be the best player in the league again. He mightn't get the award because the politics maybe that goes around it, where you feel you can't give a player back-to-back Player of the Year awards, but I think he's going to be the player again.
Okay, end of call. You're one of the people who have gone for Man City to regain the Premier League title. Give us your top four and your player of the season then.
Yeah, top four is going to be interesting. I went for City simply because it's so difficult to retain the Premier League title once you've won it. And City are the only team this decade that have actually done that. Have Liverpool built enough in their team to develop it further? I don't know, but it's going to be close. I don't think that's going to be a situation where Man City are running away, but I think it's going to be a tighter title race this year. City, Liverpool, Chelsea and United, top four in that order. Then player of the season, I went with Bruno Fernandes for the player of the season on my predictions. Now, it doesn't usually go to a player who doesn't win the league, so that's probably unlikely, but I do think he's going to be one of the standout players. So I went for Bruno Fernandes for that.
Okay, Endicott is expecting lots of penalties for Manchester United in the coming season if Bruno Fernandes is going to win Player of the Year. Don't forget our two live games on Off the Ball on News Talk this coming Sunday. West Brom against Leicester City, 2 p.m. Kenny Cunningham and Stephen Doyle on the microphones for that one. Former Ireland boss Brian Kerr will join Nathan Murphy for Spurs against Everton at 4:30. Live and exclusive commentary on Off the Ball on News Talk. We'll also have updates from all the games tomorrow on Off the Ball with John Duggan. And don't forget that Enda and I will be back for Team 33 tonight, where we're looking at the second set of episodes in the Tottenham documentary series on Amazon. We will talk to you again next Friday. Best of luck if you're having a punt this weekend, and thanks for joining us.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.